We're going to begin this morning with a video. If you would, take a look.
This is the missional church. Simple. In the past, churches have spent large amounts of resources to construct the most attractive places imaginable for the community in which they were situated. Great music, compelling teaching, and a host of programs designed to gather people together were the staple of such church communities. Anyone who wanted to come was welcome, and church members were encouraged to invite their friends and neighbors. Generally, people had a pleasant experience. The people who came and were cared for seemed relatively similar. Education, income, pastimes, race, struggles, and histories seemed to be almost identical. Eventually, someone asked the question, "What about all the people who aren't like us, but who live around us? Why aren't they here too?" In response, the church increased its marketing budget, direct mailing the community, taking out ads in local papers, buying radio time, releasing a fresh web page, and offering to host the world's greatest event. The church was determined to be the center of everything great that happened in the community. Church members began to rely on the church to do the work of conveying God's story in the world. If someone could be brought to an event, they could hear about Jesus from a professional teacher. Inviting people became synonymous with evangelism. The missional church, on the other hand, empowers its members to be the church in the community. The church trains, resources, encourages, and challenges its people to live out the good news in their community with those who would otherwise be suspicious of a church and its marketing efforts. The church sends out its members to live among people unfamiliar with church customs, songs, and what it holds sacred, just like a foreign missionary. The missional church recognizes then that every believer embodies the life of the church in their neighborhood, in their school, or at their place of work. Each one of them telling God's story in the context of compassionate and genuine relationships.
All right. Well, it's good to be back with you. I've been gone for a couple of weeks, and glad to be back with you this morning. You may recall, I'm sure all of you do, back in January, I showed this video, and I really began to communicate to you at that time what I sensed and believed God was stirring in my heart with regard to the direction that Emmanuel is going. And that video, I think, does a really good job of sort of encapsulating and communicating the heart of what we need to be about as a church. And so what I want to do this morning, we have a kind of a standalone message before we get started next week into our You Asked For It series. I'm going to talk to you this morning about really what I sense God stirring in my heart, where I believe that we are moving as a church. And so for those of you who are here and you're just a guest, you say, you know, well, I picked a great Sunday to come. Actually, you really did, because this is going to give you an idea as to whether or not we're moving in the direction that that you would believe in. For those of you who have been here for a while and you've watched us walk through reform and various changes, what I want you to hear this morning is really just kind of a compilation of what's been stirring in my heart for a number of years, and I believe stirring amongst our leadership. And so with that said, we're just going to get right in and we're going to get started. If you would open up your Bible to the book of Acts, we're not going to have these verses on the screen because we're going to shift from Acts 1, and we're going to be moving on over into Acts chapter 8. I want to begin today by basically making a case and showing the precedent of the New Testament and how it was that they carried forth the mission that Jesus gave in Matthew chapter 28. Now, just a little bit of setup here. Most of you probably know that the book of Acts is really an overflow of what Jesus came to do when he was on this earth. So in the Gospels, these are narrative books that tell the story of Jesus coming to this earth, incarnating himself as God amongst the people. And at the end of Matthew chapter 28, we have probably all heard or know of, to some extent, this commission that he gave his disciples. His model was in Mark 3, we find Jesus saying that he developed these men or brought these men so that they could be with him and so that he could send them out. And that's really kind of a condensation of the Gospels. We see Jesus developing, raising up these men, these disciples, these followers, so that he could send them out. He could release them, unleash them into the world. In John chapter 20, verse 21, he tells his disciples, he says, "As the Father has sent me, so also I send you." So here's what we know from just the gospel accounts. We know that Jesus was the model. Jesus was the example. He is the incarnation of God in the flesh, in this world, and the, him being the model, he desires for us to be sent out in the same way that he was sent from his Father. If you're with me, just kind of let me know you're tracking. I'm going to try to give you a kind of a lot of theology condensed in a short amount of time. So that's the model that Jesus gives in the Gospels. Now, in the book of Acts, what we find is another narrative account of what it looks like for us, for you, to be sent, to be the church on mission. Acts chapter 1, verse 8. This is the kind of core verse, I think, that drives the rest of the book of Acts. Verse 8, Jesus says, "But you will receive power when the Holy Spirit has come upon you." I want you to take note of this statement. He says, "And you shall be my witnesses," both, and I want you to cue in here to the locations that he mentions, Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria, and even to the remotest part of the earth. So just to make sure we're tracking, can you say Jerusalem, Judea, Samaria? Listen, I had to get on the first service because Sam Dyer was here 2 weeks ago and he had y'all jumping pews. So I don't want to have to yell and say things that I will regret after the sermon. Sam, he said stuff. I'm like, how do you get away with saying that from up here? Anyway, so just, you know, talk to me. Let me know you're with me here. He gives these three locations here, Jerusalem, Judea, and Samaria, even to the remotest part of the earth. So this verse, verse 8, is the foundation, the driving force, the thrust behind everything else that happens in the book of Acts. What we see from verse 8 of chapter 1 is that Jesus' intent was that the community of the church would be oriented around the cause of Jesus. And this is a crucial distinction. Jesus desired for the community to be built upon the cause. So everything aside from that central cause to be Jesus' witnesses, everything else was supplementary. Everything else was secondary. Jesus called upon the people. He gave them this cause, which was to be his witnesses, to make disciples. He didn't call the church to do anything else. That was their central cause. They had no other cause. It wasn't about anything else. It was about that. So that was to be the center. Now, here's what tends to happen. I'll just kind of give a little commentary on what seems to happen in any kind of organization, any kind of group that lives for any length of time. As opposed to the central cause being what it was originally supposed to be, which was Jesus, over the course of time, what tends to happen is that the cause becomes the community itself. So whereas at one time the cause was Jesus and putting him forth in the community, spreading his fame, what can tend to happen, and it can be a kind of a subtle, deadly little thing, is that instead of thinking, how can we advance Jesus, we come to think, how can we advance ourselves? How can we perpetuate ourselves? How can we advance the church? How can we grow the organization? And when I say we, I'm not pointing fingers at you. I mean, as pastors and leaders, we are some of the worst at that. You know, we want to grow our own kingdom. But what we need to see in verse chapter 1, verse 8, is that there was a central cause, and that any time we exist for anything other than that cause, we've missed the very heart of what God desires to do. So we see that as the foundation. Now, fast forward, Acts chapter 8. In Acts chapter 8, what we see here is in between chapters 1 and 8, there's been a considerable growth that's taken place in the church. There have been several like revival type things. Peter has preached. There are thousands who have come to faith in Jesus. But the church had remained stationary in Jerusalem. This is a key point. Because where did Jesus say that the people were to be his witnesses? In Jerusalem and where else? Judea and Samaria. Okay, but the church is still, they've kind of got this hub in Jerusalem. They're not moving. So look at what happens in the second half of verse 1 of chapter 8. It says, "On that day, a great persecution began against the church in Jerusalem." And I want, look at what happens here. "And they were all scattered throughout the regions of Judea and Samaria." So the church kind of holds up. The church, and this is just the natural way that things tend to happen. The church gets big in Jerusalem, probably a lot of resources, a lot of teachers, maybe some really cool things happening in Jerusalem. But they had forgotten the fact that Jesus said in verse 8, you're not just supposed to stay in Jerusalem. You're supposed to get out of Jerusalem. You're to be my witnesses, not just here where you live in your home. You're also to be my witnesses in Judea and Samaria and to the uttermost parts of the earth. So what God ordains or allows or causes or whatever is this persecution to come and in some way splinter the church, break the church so that the church would move out. And what we find later in chapter 8 of in Acts is that Philip, he went out and he spread the gospel. I believe it's in around verse 5. It says that the believers, when they went out spreading the word. If you fast forward in Acts chapter 10, Peter goes to these people that had previously been thought to be unclean and unworthy of this, you know, Jewish religion, and he spread that to them. Later on, we find Paul, we find Barnabas, we find Timothy joining this. And the rest of the book of Acts is about the church being sent intentionally. So as opposed to the church holding up in one location, just being a hub, the church became a church that was sent. And here's what happened as a result. The church reproduced itself. Individual believers in Jesus were reproduced. Churches were birthed. Churches were planted. Churches were reproduced. That's the model that we find in the book of Acts. So to give you a visual of what I'm talking about here this morning, could the Clark family, could you come on up? I want to kind of give you a visual of this. Now, Scott and Connor, they are gone this morning. So, you know, like half of our church is not here. So, anyway, they're not able to be here. But there are enough Clarks here that we can kind of get a picture of this. John and Zulu, if we could have you all kind of on one end and just stagger according to your age. Adam, if you and Brenda could kind of come in the center and just work your way on out. Y'all come on up too. Come on down on this end. This is a picture of what God's created, intended design is. Whether you're talking about in any area of nature, His design is for, and man, you've done an incredible job with this, seeing that this makes sure that it happens. His design, His ideal is for there to be reproducing. For there to be generations. Easy, Zoo. John paid me to say that, by the way, so anyway. So what we have here is this beautiful picture, right? Of a family reproducing itself. And, you know, if we had, you know, Scott and Zarna and all the rest of the kids here, it's just this incredibly rich picture. I mean, there's going to be life that comes from this picture right here for years and years and years and years. Life begets life. It's reproducing, right? All right, now, what I want to do is everybody sit down except just you. Do you mind if I ask how old you are?
How old am I?
Yes.
62.
What would it be like if Dr. Clark here, at 62 years old, had never said, I want to reproduce something in the future. I want there to be life. I want to continue my name. I want to produce offspring. That's not quite as compelling of a picture, is it, of the future? I mean, one of these days, we all know that our bodies are going to wear out, that things are just, we're just not going to exist anymore. But the way to perpetuate, the way to continue, the way to move forward the gospel is the reproducing of believers in the churches. Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. Give him a hand. Now, here's what I want to draw us to, and then I'm going to ask Jason if he would come up, and we're going to talk about some specifics. You said you're 62. I think Emmanuel is about 62 as a church. We're in our early 60s. So here's my question. Where's our offspring? Where's our spiritual offspring? Because we can come up with reasons or excuses, probably a whole host of reasons why we can't produce spiritual offspring. We can't reproduce as a church, but I'm just saying to you, I think we see in the precedent of the New Testament, we see the pattern, this model in the New Testament of believers reproducing believers, churches reproducing churches. And so I just want to come to you and say, in terms of where we're going as a church, here's what I believe. I believe that God is moving us in the direction of being a church that reproduces other believers and reproduces churches. So with that said, Jason, if you would, come on up. And what Jason and I are going to do is dialogue just a little bit. And I don't know how far off I've gotten us on our time. But anyway, just dialogue a little bit about, in January, I basically introduced this idea of being a church that reproduces, you know, individuals and also groups. But we want to give just a little bit more specificity to it. And understand that as we walk through, there's not really anything that we've really figured out 100%, but we're in the process of praying, of seeking, of asking questions, of talking. And we just want to come to you today and in kind of an informational way say, join this process. Begin this conversation together. And at the end of this message, what we're going to do is have a quick time for Q&A. So if there are questions, as Jason is up here talking, and sometimes he just doesn't make sense. And, you know, I don't know what, you know, some of that just happens to both of us. But, you know, when that happens, if it happens, if you would text your question in, and we're going to do our best to get through several questions here once we are done. And but again, remember that if as we walk through this, you find yourself scratching your head or thinking, I don't understand all that stuff, it's okay. It's okay. It's not like we're going to start doing this stuff tomorrow. We're just saying that this is the direction that we're seeking to move as a church. So with that said, Jason, would you kind of get us started in terms of the specifics and talk to us a little bit about kind of our need to reproduce individuals?
Yeah, I think as we begin that, it's important to note that I sit here in front of you today, someone who is utterly sinful and shameful and deserving of hell, of the wrath of God. That's what I deserve. And yet somewhere along the way, somebody who had been touched by the gospel of Jesus Christ stepped out of what was comfortable, decided they weren't just going to kind of keep it to themselves, and they shared the gospel with me. If you're a believer in this room, you're a beneficiary of somebody who was willing to do what was difficult and what was hard and step out and share the good news of Jesus Christ. Now, the strange thing that for some reason happens in the church is that we as beneficiaries of the gospel of Jesus, of what he did on the cross, we just think, oh, well, you know, I'm going to leave it up to somebody else to share the gospel. You know, to be very honest with you, just a few things about sharing, you know, reproducing as individuals. First of all, Christ has called all of us to do it. Jesus said, go and make disciples. Go and essentially to 12 guys who are a ragtag bunch of guys, he said, go and do what I've done with you. Go reproduce what I've produced in you. Go share the gospel. Go and make disciples of all the nations. So, first of all, Jesus told you to do it. The second thing, there are people, their eternity hangs in the balance of whether or not you'll choose to be faithful. The final piece about this, in terms of reproducing your faith in other people, is this. There's nothing that will grow you more than making disciples. Mm-hmm. Let me just be honest with you. I thought I was a fairly mature believer, and then I got married. And then I was like, oh my gosh, I have no patience, I'm selfish and all these things. But then it got like 1,000 times worse when I had kids. And I'm like, I'm the biggest jerk alive. I don't know. I don't even know if I have a relationship with God. And my kids make me want to scream and I think things and horrible stuff. The truth of it is when you begin to reproduce, when you begin to pour yourself in and disciple someone, you begin to realize just how selfish you are, just how far God has to take you. But it's an incredible opportunity to grow. It requires great sacrifice. And yet the benefits of this are, well, they're eternal. They're infinite. So.
Well, I think one of the reasons to start talking about reproducing individuals is because everything else we do as a church depends on our ability to do just that, what Jason has just talked about. So if we cannot reproduce individuals and if we're not actively engaged in being disciple makers on an individual basis, then whatever else we try to do as a church is just going to be kind of a band-aid over the problem. So this is fundamental to our mission, and I think it's fundamental to Jesus' mission for us. So how does we're talking about here reproducing individuals? Can you talk about the connection between that and then something that I know is near and dear to your heart, which is reproducing groups? I think we're going to have some images up there on the screen. As far as reproducing individuals, this is really profound. So take a look at this. I did that myself,
Brian,
just so you'll
Brian's
all be impressed.
Artwork,
reproducing individuals, we want to see that happen. Jason, talk to us a little bit about reproducing groups.
I think one of the huge failures of evangelism as we knew it kind of in past days was that it really involved knocking on a door. You know, if you die tonight, you know for sure, whatever, and then you walk away and you leave people there. Mm. And Jesus never called us to make converts. He called us to make disciples. And so as a step for you, I don't think discipleship necessarily takes place very well on its own, that you just kind of have Jesus and you're good. Discipleship takes place best in the midst of a small group of believers who can exercise and share their gifts. And honestly, as iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. And so with our groups, that's the environment for you to get into, that people will be different from you. They'll be gifted uniquely. They'll have rough edges that drive you crazy. And yet in the midst of this small group of believers, you have an opportunity to grow and to blossom in your faith. If you read the New Testament, you read like in Corinthians, you know, and it's like different people doing different things in the church service, and this guy using this gift and this lady using this gift and all these things. You think, why don't we do that in our church? Well, to be honest with you, it's because our church has several hundred people in it, and that would take forever. And yet what happened even with the New Testament church was they would meet house to house. Mm-hmm. And they would exercise their gifts, and they would care for one another, and they would share a word or an encouragement and that sort of thing. And so, honestly, with our groups, that's the environment in which people can be made disciples. And so, as we want to reproduce individuals, we need to get them connected to a group of believers where they can really blossom and grow. So,
and I know kind of a standard phrase that I've heard is, as you grow larger, you need to also grow smaller. Because we want to have the impact, you know, of a large church, but at the same time have, as one writer has said, the intimacy of kind of a small group. So you gain something there that, honestly, if you just show up kind of on a Sunday morning as an anonymous, you know, a tender, you will never get through those small group environments. Let us hear a little bit, though, as you're thinking about toward the fall, what do we need to see happen in terms of reproducing groups now, immediately?
Well, I got up and ranted about this in the first service, but it's certainly something I'm very passionate about, to be very honest with you, church. God has sent us a tremendous number of people over the past 2 years since I've been here, and all of our struggles are like, where are we going to put this group or this group? And it's really hard to find a place for people. But I feel like if we're really struggling as a church in any one area, and I'm just going to be very frank with you, it's in people stepping up to be leaders. We have people who know Jesus Christ, who have come to faith in Jesus Christ, who are attending our church that don't have groups to go to. And the reason why is that some of you, you've been content to sit in a group rather than step out and begin to lead. And I'll share the analogy I shared with the early service. There, those of you who are hesitant, I don't think it's like out of maliciousness. I don't think you're necessarily lazy or bad. But let me give you a kind of an analogy that I was given by a pastor named Ephraim Smith. He said some people in life, they go through life and they think, you know, the Christian walk, the whole thing, that they want to be like Batman. And so Batman has all these tools and gadgets, you know, he's got the thing on his belt and all the neat stuff. He's got the coolest car. He can do incredible feats, but he needs a gadget to do it. And for many of you, you might look at your small group leader and you think, my goodness, they know the Bible. My goodness, they're so relational. They're so good with people. They have all of these tools, all of these gadgets that I don't have, and so I could never do it. But Ephraim Smith shared with me is that we're not like Batman here. We're like Superman. And the cool thing about Superman, all he had was a cape and supernatural power. And if you know Jesus Christ, you have the Holy Spirit of God within you. And he wants to use you. He has equipped you by his Spirit. And so if you're holding back because you don't think you know enough, you're good enough, you're smart enough, you can lead well enough, listen, what we really need over the next year are 20 new group leaders to accommodate the people God has already sent us. And I believe that this morning he's speaking to some of your hearts. And let me just encourage you that you can do it. God has given you his Spirit. And if he can take a bunch of, you know, a fisherman, the guys that the Pharisees saw them as unlearned and unschooled, and yet they had been with God in the same way, God wants to use you and put his glory on display through your life. So if you've been considering this, thinking about it, if you haven't, really begin to consider now, because we desperately need you. If we're going to be faithful as a church and disciple the people God has been sending us, we need you to step up and to lead.
Yeah, and we would hope that if you're saved and you're, I mean, none of us are perfect, but if you're seeking to walk out your life as a Christian, this is an opportunity that will just help you. You know, we grow as we go. And so if you're considering this, but you say, I'm just not spiritual enough, or I don't know enough, I mean, the format that we have set up, Jason can get with you and work with you on that, is doable. doable. It's very, very doable. Yeah. So we want to see groups reproduce. Yeah.
My mantra is, if you can read, you can lead. So I'm going to give you a discussion guide, and you're going to read questions on a sheet. You can do this. Pray for your group. Ask God to use you, and it'll be incredible what you see God do through you in that.
Yeah. So we see the first two things there. We want to reproduce individuals, reproduce groups. The third thing is what I hinted at in my introduction. We also want to be a church that reproduces gatherings. If we are effective at reproducing individual followers of Jesus and we're reproducing groups, the question then comes, for what end? You know, for what purpose are we reproducing them? Again, the model that we find in the New Testament church is that as believers were effective in advancing the gospel in their own lives, meeting house to house, that gave this environment for Paul to go along as an apostle and plant churches. And so as the churches advanced, the gospel advanced. You don't have one thing advancing without the other. So we want to be a church that's very serious about praying, studying, learning, working together, figuring out how it is that we can reproduce gatherings. Now, here's where a little bit more specificity is going to come in. And talk through about what this might look like. And again, we're still kind of in the stage where dreaming, praying about this. But talk through, I'll just walk you through just a few things that can happen in order for us to develop gatherings. If you hear it and you say, okay, what might this look like? How would we go about doing it? Here's just kind of a basic model that we could use. If we get some groups together in one particular community or one location, we have an indication, if we have, you know, 10 to 50 people, and once we get to that area, that stage where we get about 50 people, we probably have an idea, okay, God is working in that area. So the question then becomes, how do we join God in what he's doing in that area to build his church? I, as your pastor, I've concluded I have one of two options. Number one, I can continue to ask the people who are coming from another community, y'all come to us. I can do that. Or secondly, I can ask you, the church, let's go to them. What I want to do is, instead of continuing to say to people in other communities, all right, y'all keep coming to us, I want to say, all right, let's go to them. And when we get about 50 people, we get multiple groups gathering in one community, let's see that God is at work and that he may want to do something more than just bringing people from there to here. So there's that initial stage, that initial group, moving on forward. The second step to creating these additional gatherings would be we could just begin to have gatherings themselves. The worship type services, we don't know exactly what this would look like, but when we get to the point where we've got about 50 or 100 people, we've got this critical mass, we've got people who are motivated, we've got some momentum, and let's just begin additional gatherings in those locations when we get to that stage. The third step toward this is basically when we're in the growing mode, we've got between 100 and 200 people. I mean, you're looking at the development of, you know, this individual gathering. It has its, I don't know, just a lot of resources. But the fourth step to this gathering process is when we can say to those groups, those gatherings that we are helping reproduce, that when you get to a place, when you have 200 or so, when you reach maturity, what do we do when we mature? We reproduce. So we want to be a church that reproduces reproducing churches. Churches that go out and further the kingdom of God through reproducing these gatherings. That's just a real quick overview on steps to this. Now, question, why would this be necessary? Let me walk you through just a few reasons why I think this is important. The first is this, and hopefully you've seen this from Acts. The heart of God is to go. To scatter, to move out. This is his heart that we do this as a church. Number two, I would make a case, and we could sit down and have long conversations about this, and at some point there will be a need for it, that the most effective way for us to carry out the Great Commission is through reproducing ourselves into other gatherings and bodies. This is not just something that we find in the scriptures, but if you look statistically at what's taking place across the board, the most effective way to fulfill the Great Commission is here. That's not necessarily a debatable thing. It's a proven thing. We just need to kind of open up our eyes to it. Number three, leadership development and deployment. I'm somewhat burdened because Sunday morning I preach and I look upon the faces of people who have incredible talent. We are a resource-rich church, not necessarily just in terms of finances, but in terms of people. We have incredible leaders. And so, I don't know if you call it a conviction that I have in my own heart, is what are we doing with the leaders that God is sending to us? You know, we're a church right now that we're a lot more well-oiled than we were maybe a few years ago, but we still need to be developing leaders and deploying leaders. How do we do that? One of the best ways to do that is through reproducing our gatherings. The fourth reason is this, and I think this is just a very practical thing for you to consider. People are more apt to connect with the church in their own community. How many times have you had the conversation? I've had this multiple times. You know, once you connect with something that we're doing here at Emmanuel, well, you know, if I'm going to go to a church, I want to go to a church that's in my community. The fact of the matter is that the community in which we live is, by necessity or by default, a geographical barrier that's going to keep many people from attending here. Now, we can all cite instances of, you know, churches where they break the mold and they do something, you know, they've got thousands of people coming at one location. That is 1 out of 1,000 or 1 out of 10,000. The frank truth is that by and large, if people are going to get connected to a body of Jesus, they're going to get connected to a body of Jesus in their community. So why don't we as a church say, all right, we'll be a church that takes the church to them instead of asking them to come to us. So not only are the people more apt to attend a gathering that is in their location, also they're more apt to bring their friends to a church that is in their community. So for a number of reasons, I think that we need to be praying, we need to be open, we need to be considering, we need to be talking about how do we reproduce individuals, how do we produce groups, and how do we produce gatherings as a church. So with that said, that's kind of the I don't know if you call this kind of another introduction or just to kind of give you an update on where we are. With that said, are there any questions? I don't know, Jason, anything that comes to your mind as we... as I've talked through some of those things.
Well, I think the biggest thing that I'm thinking up here is that reproduction at any level, sharing your faith, splitting your group that you've loved, that you've been with for 2 years, so that you can have two groups, sending people out, you know, other gatherings and things. There's a price to pay. There's a cost. Hmm. And it's something that there's a sacrifice that has to be made, relationships, whatever it might be. And yet the reward is, you know, infinitely greater than what the cost would be. And so certainly there will be some difficult decisions that have to be made. You know, in my own community group, they always say, you're not going to leave our group, are you? You're not going to split. You know, it's difficult. And yet at the same time, if we are going to reach out and disciple other people and include other people, at some point we're going to have to say sorry.
So. Yeah. Yeah. And I think as long as we look at surrender in terms of what we stand to gain, as opposed to just what we lose, we as a church have to be on mission. And so, yeah, I mean, the cost of doing something may be great, but I would say that the cost of doing nothing is even greater. Mm-hmm. There are right now, and some of you may know this, 80 to 85% of churches in America that there are, you know, five stages to a church's life. You've got birth, growth, plateau, decline, and death. 80 to 85% of churches, guess where they are? They're either at the plateau or declining stage. And again, if we're not reproducing ourselves, we can fool ourselves into thinking that won't happen to us. It will. It will. We have to be reproducing ourselves. For every church that opens, you know, this is one question I've gotten. Why is there a need for more gatherings? For every church that started today, there are about 3 to 4 that are closing. Mm-hmm. And the number of churches, in 1989, there were less than half as many churches as there were in 1906 by population. Mm-hmm. So what we have here is that the number of people are increasing in America, the number of churches is decreasing. So there's a need for this. Anyway, I'm not quit answering questions nobody's asking. Do we have any other questions back there? Okay, what type of leadership development or training will be available to those who feel led to go to these communities and grow these new gatherings? Reflecting on this, I would say we've got to figure out what we're doing. And this is going to be a new thing. It's going to be a fresh thing for all of us. And so as we are growing and learning in this, then we're going to have to bring other people along. I will say that at some point we're going to have a, I don't know if you'd call it a plan or something that's mapped out that can help a person go from an apprentice to someone who's leading others and continue to grow in their leadership ability in a very intentional kind of as much as we can in kind of an orderly, organized kind of way.
Yeah, and that's part of what we're going to begin. We're looking at kind of changing the way we do some things on Wednesday night to include specifically an equipping portion to where, rather than just going to a normal class like you've been doing for years, we're going to have a class that's very targeted at identifying your gifts, your abilities, kind of where God has been directing your life, and then helping you to equip you to grow in those areas, be it sharing your faith or leading a gathering. There will be a piece there for that. Yeah. So,
if we don't have any new questions, I've got a question. Do we have a new question? Okay. All right. If small groups is going out, and going out is what reproduces, then why do we need Sunday morning at all? That is an awesome question. What we find in the New Testament is two things. And I think if you picture the church as a plane, there are two wings. You find the church gathered, and you find the church scattered. And so if either one of the wings of that plane falls off, if we gather but we don't scatter, what happens? We plummet. If we try to develop a model that says we're not going to gather together, we're just going to scatter, and we don't come back and worship together, you know, then that's just not a sustainable model. There are some churches that are trying to move to that. You know, every other week they worship together, and I just don't think that's a sustainable model for us. The weekly coming together, not forsaking the assembling of the brethren, is an incredible need for us as a church. One question that I received in between the two services, I thought this was an excellent question. It says, how are gatherings different from pulling people away from churches that we're trying to unify with? I think what's behind that question is the assumption that basically reproducing other gatherings is just a means to get other sheep from other pastures to transfer to ours. And I would say this, that if that is the goal, the intent, or even the end product of what happens, then we've not done what we were supposed to do. If what is accomplished through us reproducing gatherings is people find a better version of church that they like, and so they leave their existing flock to go to another flock, then I think we need to reassess the whole thing and say, this just isn't working. But again, statistically, the way churches become mega churches, their growth, and if you just kind of play this out for an established church like we are right now, the greater majority of our growth, some 60 to 80% of our growth, will come generally through transfer growth. If we are in line with what is statistically happening elsewhere. For new churches, that number is flipped. The new churches, new gatherings, tend to draw the greater majority of their people from people who are unchurched. So that's a key piece in why it's important for us to reproduce these gatherings.
Yeah. Statistically speaking, we're much more likely to be that church that just draws everyone in if we just stay here and build this thing up and make it really pretty and good than if we do send out. So
yeah. Will you tell me if I start sounding like a nerd? I feel like I'm saying statistics a lot up here.
Yeah.
So, okay. Any other questions? Yes, we do. All right. I think we got something coming up here. Jason, I think this is a... It's going a lot better than the first service. We're able to move along a little quicker.
Yeah.
I think we got the question on its way here in just a minute. All right. Boy, yeah. All right. On Sundays, I see a lot of young adults, but to be honest, I don't know half of them. I feel like they may be too searching for some of the same things that I am as a young adult. What is one way that I can step up to find them? Man, that's a great question, because here's the challenge with, as churches grow larger, there's, you know, the most any person can connect with is about most people that a person can connect with is about 150 other people. And so as we're growing, new faces are in, you know, faces are in and out. It is very difficult to get connected to other young people. Jason, I'm going to turn that to you because I think that really has a lot to do with community groups as far as how to get connected.
Well, that's part of what Brian said earlier as he was talking, is that as a church grows larger, you've got to grow smaller. And the truth of it is the idea that you can know everybody and be everyone's friend and know everyone's name as your church gets beyond about 150 to 200, you can't do it anymore. And so if you want to get involved and get to know young people and, you know, have people that, like you said, maybe want some of the same needs met, get involved in a community group that has young people in it. And so most of our younger community groups, they'll, you know, they have crazy kids too, and they'll take yours or, you know, singles, whatever it is. But join them, get in the middle of it with them. I would say if you want to get it, if you want to connect with people more, dig a little deeper, get involved a little more deeply, be it in groups or whatever.
And so, this fall, we're going to be emphasizing that again. So when we get started in August, September, we're going to be making opportunities available for you to get connected to groups. And keep in mind, we're figuring this out as we go, but that's the key piece, I think, for us in terms of getting connected.
And if you really want to connect, there's room on my mowing crew.
Yeah, that's a good plug. That's a good plug. One last question. We have any more questions? All right. Why do we not meet over the summer for small groups for Wednesday nights? Well, there are probably a lot of workers who could answer that question maybe a little bit better than us. But you want to hit the community groups piece as far as you can either just let something die or kill it and then restart it.
Yeah.
But on Wednesday nights, I would say, have you seen what happens here on Wednesday nights? It's awesome. I mean, we've got incredible workers who are coming and making things happen with children and youth. I think part of what makes that effective is that people have the energy to actually do it. And for far too long, I think we've not done an effective job at telling people it's okay to rest. You know, it's okay to not work every Wednesday night of the year. So we want to give people an opportunity just to kind of breathe, to catch their breath. And I hope that question is not made because, well, I'm not getting served on Wednesday nights. We've got people who are busting their tails on Wednesday nights, and we need to make sure that we are very considerate that we don't burn them out. So long story short, I would say just to give people a rest, help us to get ready for the fall.
Yeah. As far as the community groups, for one, our groups, they have the opportunity. They can keep meeting if they want, but you don't have to. And here's the reason why. Brian talks about killing it before it dies. On this specific week alone, my group just decided to continue to meet over the summer, but three couples are gone. And so it may be us and another couple tonight trying to pull this thing off. And basically, when a host prepares a home and a leader comes prepared to lead and no one shows up because it's summer and everyone's everywhere, it gets to be kind of, well, tiring. And so much like on Wednesday night, our leaders and our hosts, they work hard. They're investing in their groups. And so what groups typically do over the summer is get together about once a month. They still keep those relationships. They interact. They have fun. They have fellowships. But we don't say, you know, every single week, go out, you know, like we would in the fall and spring.
If you continue to have questions, feel free to email. We're going to be around after the service. We want to continue having this conversation. Again, we're not ready to turn around tomorrow and start something. We just want to come today and say, okay, church, here's where we need to be moving. And so just kind of give you a heads up, begin praying about this. And when all is said and done, you know, in the end result, I would ask you to consider not just the you know, potential challenges to this, but man, let's consider how this could help us fulfill the Great Commission in this area, how we can influence this region with the gospel of Jesus. So we're going to continue talking about this. With that said, I'm going to pray, and our ushers are going to come forward, and we're going to move to kind of take up our offering and then dismiss. So let's pray.